Welcome into the Follow On Podcast here on followoncricket.com. Chinmay Vaidyashai Chavan Parth Joshi here. And some history being made in Pakistan cricket. Fakhar Zaman, 210 not out in the fourth ODI, Pakistan against Zimbabwe. Pakistan has already wrapped up that series. They'll go for the 5-0 sweep on Sunday. But Zaman, 210 not out. It's the first double hundred by a Pakistani. It's also the highest score by an individual batsman in an ODI for Pakistan. And Zaman has been killing it so far in this series. 430 runs, two centuries, 150. And for comparison, the top scorer for Zimbabwe is Hamilton Mazakadze with 98 runs across the ODIs. So Zaman has played, obviously, exceptionally well. And he's going to break another record, assuming he keeps his form up. He's going to be the fastest batsman to reach 1,000 ODI runs. He has 980 runs in 17 ODIs. The current record, which is held by five others, Viv Richards, Jonathan Trott, Kevin Peterson, Quinton de Kock, and his teammate Babar Azam, is 21 ODIs. So he's probably going to break that too. Mm-hmm. And so you guys might remember he had a century against India in the Champions Trophy final. And this is kind of the guy now, as Pakistan reemerges on the international circuit, that everyone's looking at. How would you quantify Zaman's performance so far in this series?
He broke the first wicket opening partnership record with Imam Ul Haq in that match we talked about. And I would quantify it. Well, granted, it's against Zimbabwe, so they take that with a grain of salt. But 210 is a double century, regardless of what team it comes against. And the argument is that someone has to score those runs, so he did that. And then exceptional innings, it took him like 167 balls or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been on top of the bowling completely. You know, he's showing no signs of weakness right now, like you said, Ashe. It is Zimbabwe, so he can't make too many claims. But like Chinmay mentioned earlier, he did this in the Champions Trophy final against India as well, where he scored a great 100, led Pakistan to victory. So I'm excited to see what he does. Very young player, a good Pakistani core to build around him, a good bowling attack to back him. It'll be exciting to see what happens going forward and moving into the World Cup next year.
Yeah, you guys mentioned it was against Zimbabwe, and I broke down his matches. So 17 ODIs so far. The three matches that he played in the Champions Trophy, England, South Africa, and India. But then the other 14 matches that he's played has been Zimbabwe, Sri Lanka, and New Zealand, a combination across those. So maybe not the toughest of competition for, you know, chasing that 1,000-run mark, but, you know, you still got to score the runs. You still got to put in the work and score the runs. So not taking away anything from the accomplishment, maybe the competition level is not what we would expect it to be.
Well, 450 of those almost 1,000 are going to be against Zimbabwe, so it's like nearly half. He's possibly due for the fastest three centuries, one of them a double century. That's definitely, I think that's quite a record. He's going to, if he gets 20 the next match, he can break it by three matches, which is
looking very likely given his current form. The next question I want to ask you guys, and I wrote about this about a week and a half ago, was I think it's time now for somebody to do a full tour of Pakistan. It's been a decade since somebody did a full tour. So the West Indies played a T20 series, I think, in April. Zimbabwe played an ODI series back in 2015. But now Pakistan, you look at this young core that they have, and I've just listed, you know, six guys. We got Zaman, who's 28, Imam Ul Haq, who's 22, nephew of Inzamam Ul Haq, Asif Ali, 26, Mohammad Amir, after all the doping, the suspensions, and all that, he's still only 26. Mm-hmm. Shadab Khan, 19. He had a good Zimbabwe series. He had a good tri-series as well. And Babar Azam at 23. So you got six guys who are forming a good young core, and the home crowd can't cheer for them because no one's stepping up. So who should step up to do a Pakistan tour, or should there be a full Pakistan tour? Is it time?
They have those ongoing security concerns. So, and I think they play the Pakistan Super League in the UAE. I think they should do an edition of the Super League at home.
They have done two Super Leagues at home, I think.
Okay, so I think that they can at least convince one of the smaller boards to tour Pakistan. You know, I don't think any of the big three boards will agree to a tour yet because of pressing security concerns. But if they get someone like South Africa or another New Zealand or another team like that, Sri Lanka, who will be able to tour them. I think they can gauge their home fan interest. Clearly, I mean, obviously they have home fan interest, but they haven't been able to go to a international match at home in quite some time.
I agree with that. My thought process on this is that somebody has to be the first one, right, after all this time. So you might as well go all out and try to get one of the bigger boards. Pakistan isn't going to play after the Zimbabwe ODI series until the end of the year. So they have a long break to figure this out. But I do think they should go for one of the bigger boards. I really do think Australia, maybe even India, maybe work out something with BCCI to do a home-and-home set. But it definitely needs to happen. I think it's long overdue, and somebody has to be the first one to do it. So that distinction is going to be there no matter what.
Right, agreed. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be India, because as we've seen, India is also unwilling to host Pakistan. So that tension is clearly still there, so that might be a little out of reach currently. But I do think the ball has to start rolling somewhere, so they do need to start reaching out. Like Ajay mentioned, maybe it is a small country to begin with, but eventually cricket needs to be played in Pakistan, because Pakistan is a country of cricket, great fan base, a lot of good players, and it's part of the culture there. So I think it would be good for cricket to have some more matches being played in Pakistan.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the culture, the tradition. You know, they won a World Cup. Granted, it was back in 92, but
right. They
also made a final in 99. And they won the Champions Trophy in 2017. It was kind of an unexpected run. Nobody really saw it coming after the first match. They had a pretty poor performance. But now this young core, as you look to the World Cup in 2019, where do you see Pakistan fitting in this World Cup going forward? If they maintain this core, obviously the form still has to play out. But where do you see this Pakistan team fitting into that World Cup puzzle as far as contending for a title goes?
So my own personal issue with any Pakistan team is they're always inconsistent in cups. One day they can be world beaters, they can upset Australia, they can upset India, England. You saw last year in the Champions Trophy, they actually demolished India in the final. And another day they could come out as one of the worst looking teams. So I think it's very common for them to do so. I don't know if that young core has the consistency to necessarily be favorites to compete in the World Cup, but I think they can go far. If you were to ask me now, maybe a quarterfinal team or something like that, I think there's a couple teams out there that are more set in terms of their batting lineups and their coaching, namely England comes to mind, England, India, and maybe New Zealand. But I think Pakistan is at least looking to gain some form. They'll use this series to their advantage, but I think they'll have a little break, which could be disadvantages for them because they're not playing till the end of the year.
So I'll interject here real quickly. The World Cup format in 2019 is going to be one 10-team pool with the top four making it to a semifinal round. So the quarterfinal option is not even there for Pakistan. So I guess the question is, do they make a semifinal? And right now I would probably say no based on the teams, but they're looking good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, I think the way this the format of the tournament, there's a lot of room for upsets to happen. And I think, you know, Pakistan is going to have some easy games in this tournament, as are the other big teams, and they're going to have to play some really good teams, as we know. But I do think this team has the firepower. If they come to play in a few of the big key games, they can upset Australia on a given day. They could upset England on a given day. We saw them take out India pretty handily just last year. So who says it can't happen again? Do I think they make a semifinal? I'm with you on that. Nope, I don't think so. But this team has shown to be consistent in recent. Their recent form has been great. Maybe they're not the best tournament performers, but they have won a World Cup. They just won an ICC Champions Trophy. So I don't think it's very fair to put them like, you know, South Africa is the one that comes to mind as the tournament
chokers.
Oh,
yes.
So I don't think we can put Pakistan on the same boat in that sense. So I'm looking forward to see what they do. I wouldn't be surprised if they make a semifinal. I don't think they'll do it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, they did take out England before they took out India in
right. The
Champions Trophy.
Exactly.
So arguably the top two teams got knocked out by this young Pakistan core. So we'll see how it all plays out for Pakistan going forward. They have a tour with South Africa coming up at the end of the year, and that will certainly be one to watch. We'll take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll check in on the England and India tour. The T20 series and ODI series have wrapped up, and we'll talk about that after the break. Welcome back to the Follow On Podcast here on followoncricket.com. You can check us out on Facebook at The Follow On. Follow us on Twitter at The Follow On. And Check us out on TuneIn, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. We're talking about the England-India Tour, the T20 series wrapped up, the ODI series wrapped up. There's a nice break before the Test series starts. We thought we'd check in on these two teams. We'll start with the T20 series. India wins 2-1. Everyone in the room had that prediction correct.
Right.
Rohit Sharma and KL Rahul, the top two run scorers. Hardik Pandya and Umesh Yadav combined for 11 wickets. Pretty good showing for India in that T20 series.
Yeah, they look good. Took care of business as we all predicted, as many of the experts would have picked. Yeah, but you know, England came to play as well. They got their match in. Great performance by Rahul. Rahul looked very good. And yeah, it played out the way I expected it. The Indian spinners were able to control the game. They were able to take wickets that put England in bad positions. And you know, in these shorter formats, if you start losing wickets and the wickets start tumbling, it's hard to recover from it. And we saw that.
So jumping to the ODI series, I think in both the series in general, the team selection was a little bit in question. I'm not sure what the selectors were thinking there. First of all, the seamers, Indian seamers, they took 5 for 510 in the ODI series, which is an epically bad stat. And I think England turned the tables on us when the wrist spinners was the one that wreaked havoc. I know that Kuldeep got 14 wickets in the series, which is pretty good from his end. But the spinners on England, especially Adil Rashid, he also was doing a lot of damage. Kohli got bowled out to a leg spinner for the first time in his international career. So that's quite a stat in his 11 years he's been playing. And that was actually one of the better balls I've seen.
But I'm going to disagree with you on the fact. So in the T20s, I specified that I thought the Indian spinners controlled the game and played well. In the ODI series, I was extremely shocked. I thought the England spinners actually outclassed the Indian spinners on that wicket.
I agree with you there.
Yeah, I mean, you saw that. Rashid took some wickets. Kuldeep and Chahal were unable to break the Root-Morgan partnership in that third ODI. Went for a lot of runs. Really didn't cause as much trouble as we would have expected. Whereas on the other hand, as I mentioned, Rashid, you know, bowled a ripper to Kohli, was looking like he was going to take a wicket the entire game.
Yeah, and Kuldeep, Ashay, you mentioned, you know, he had 14 wickets, but if you look at the distribution of his wickets, especially in the ODI series, he had six wickets in that opening match.
Yeah.
Right.
But then England figured him out. I mean, he had three in the next game, and then zero in the final set, in the determining set. So a guy like Kuldeep, you know, we talk about spinners like, you know, Rashid Khan, Imran Tahir earlier in his day. These guys take wickets, and they're dominant. But batsmen figure you out. Good batsmen figure you out, and they attack with a different game plan. So this was, I think, a good moment for Kuldeep. And now he has to go back to the drawing board and figure out, you know, how do I attack these guys when they come in with the game plan? So in a way, it was a good moment for him.
Right.
So I was wondering why, going back on the selection, so Rahul was dropped after his great performance, but there's also one more. Joe Root was somehow dropped from the England side. Why was he dropped?
In the T20 series?
Yeah.
So Joe Root is not, in my opinion, Joe Root is not your typical T20 player.
I agree.
And maybe the dropping in the T20 series helped him out in the ODI series.
Yeah.
Because he had two unbeaten centuries.
Yeah.
He dominated basically every bowler that he faced.
Mm-hmm.
And head-to-head against Virat Kohli, he won that battle. And when you look at, you know, one versus two, as we tend to see in the rankings, Virat Kohli number one, Joe Root number two, or, you know, however people have it, maybe Kane Williamson is up there as well. But you look at one versus two, and that's the matchup. Even though they're not going head-to-head, you see who scores more runs, who delivers the match-winning performances. And twice, Joe Root delivered the match-winning performance. And, you know, I'm working on writing something right now about Joe Root and, you know, his quest for not only a 2019 World Cup, but a top spot in that rankings. Now, Joe Root, with these two centuries, this is actually a pretty bad stat considering the history of English cricket. But Joe Root now has the most ODI centuries by any Englishman ever.
Wow. Yeah.
At 13. So, not great. But Joe Root, it just goes to show that he is, in my opinion, England's first true superstar that they've had. England has had a long list of decent players and good players, but none that you could really designate as a superstar player. I think Joe Root is the first that you can designate as a superstar player, a guy who can go out there, consistently win you matches. And we saw that. Maybe that dropping, you know, was a good thing for him and benefited him because he was absolutely brilliant in this series. And I think this was a good bounce back for him after a tough Australia tour.
Right. Yeah, I think the difference between what we saw from Kohli and between what we saw from Root in this particular series was the fact that Root was able to finish his innings. We saw Kohli get out in the 70s, yeah, two times. Wasn't able to finish his innings. Root was able to do that, continue on, get the big score, help his team win. Now, a product of that is also the fact that Kohli was under a lot more pressure. Wickets were falling around him a lot of the times. Batsmen were getting off the starts, not completing. There was a lot more pressure to score runs. Root had a little more hitting, a little more runs around him, which allowed him to play his game a little better. But, you know, at the end of the day, the score matters. And in this particular, once again, it's only three games, so I'm not jumping to any conclusions. But in this particular series, Root showed the ability to finish his innings. And as you said, that makes him a superstar.
Yeah, and 2-1, England won the ODI series 2-1. So I believe I had that. I believe Ashe had that. Probably on the wrong end of
who
this
said
one.
What did I say?
3-0 India is what you said.
But a good bounce back for England after the T20 series. And, you know, India,
I think that they're the best ODI team in the world currently.
England.
Because of their deep batting lineup.
England, right?
Yes.
Okay.
India's batting lineup, they lack a middle order, I think. And even their tailenders, England's tailenders can score. So that's where the difference maker is. And I think that brings me to the lack of the middle order in India. Barring the first ODI where Rohit showed his talent, I think the next two matches brings me to Dhoni. Him batting at number 6, number 5, wherever he bats, he kind of slows the game down. He's not what he used to be. And I know that he hit 10,000 runs in ODIs in this series, but that was a blip on the radar because of what he did in the last two matches. So he came in, he scored, the asking rate was around 8 per over. He scores 37 from 59, and he tries to take the game deep, but by the time he leaves, by the time he got out, they needed, when he came in, they needed 183 from 23, and by the time he left, 20 hours later, they only scored 75 runs. So I think that, I know he's playing based on his name, his name brand, he's Dhoni, he can have that one match winning innings, but I think as of late, it's been few and far between than what he used to do. So I don't know if having him there and not having him play an attacking game, not making him play his attacking shots early and making him, quote unquote, set his eye in is kind of hurting the Indian batting lineup in the middle order.
So you talked about the middle order, and I've been harping on this for years now. This has been a problem ever since Virat Kohli just started scoring centuries at a pretty unsustainable rate.
Right.
And India just decided that, you know, okay, Virat Kohli, go win the match. You know, you go do your thing and we'll just send, you know, randos down the order and hope they can hit 20 or 30 runs. I mean, he's been asked to score, the top order has been asked to score an insane amount of runs for India over the last two or three years. And we saw it in the Champions Trophy. We saw it fail in the Champions Trophy where the top order was doing so well up until the final. And then after that, you know, the middle order didn't, either they weren't in good knock or they just didn't have the time to perform or they were with the mentality that the top order will score runs and all of a sudden it's, you know, it's your, you know,
I think
beep moment.
You're heavily depending on Kohli to get century every match or Rohit to not get 2 off 18 and succumb to swing. Then I think you're going to get a lot of pressure in your middle order on players who haven't even played international cricket in 3 years, like Raina, expecting to come in and have match-winning knock. I don't know if that's the most sustainable strategy.
And I think the part of the problem is the fact that the top three are so good is actually part of the problem.
Right,
my opinion,
I agree.
Because they, you know, the middle order doesn't really get a chance to play big innings and sit there and do. They either are coming in a horrible situation where they really have to show some class and they're just not prepared for that. Or they come in, as you mentioned, and they need to rotate some strikes, score 20, 30 runs, and their role is considered complete. So they haven't gotten enough opportunities to actually. And, you know, there's no right way to go about this because you can't tell Rohit, Shikhar, Kohli to not play. You have to have those three batting. So it's a fine balance between finding out what needs to be done in order to solidify this middle order. But I think it's very evident, and we all are in agreement on this, that something needs to be done to solidify that
middle order. So three things based on that. You need to have, like, there was Ganguly, a former captain, and Luxman, a former senior player who spoke out in support of Rahul and other younger players who said that if you're going to drop Rahul or someone of that caliber for no reason, you're not really putting your confidence in him. I think you need to tell him, okay, you have 15 games, 12 matches to go out and bat and show us what you got. You can't drop him after one lackluster innings or for no reason other than to give new guys blood or new guys a chance in the team. And I think that there's a couple stats. Well, first of all, Dhoni got booed for the first time probably in his international career, which is, I doubt, has happened before. And Kohli's having to defend that, his selection in the team because of that. And also, they went 660 balls without hitting a single six. So that was the first time in all 50 over completed ODI innings that they haven't hit a six, and that span lasted 660 odd balls. So if you're not really rotating a strike, nor are you trying to hit out, I think you need to find a number five, a number six, and a number seven who can bat consistently. Based on if you're on the odd chance your upper order or your top order fails, like as you saw in this series, the last two games, then you really shouldn't have no hope of winning the match.
What's interesting to me in this particular ODI series is that they picked a guy, Shreyas Iyer, who had a pretty good IPL and projects as your typical, you know, top middle order batsman type, you know, maybe 3-4, you know, depending on where Kohli bats at, who projects as a 3-4-5 guy and just doesn't get a game. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you ask yourself, you know, why is he even in the team at that? You know, why select him if you aren't going to play him, is my question. And then you drop KL Rahul to then not play him. And it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. These moves don't make sense.
Another move that didn't make sense was bringing Rishabh Pant onto the test squad, test selection, but not playing him in a format where he's shown that he can be a star, especially in T20i, but give him a chance in T20i and give him a chance in ODI, see what he can do. I don't know why they're making these odd selections.
Yeah, for me, Rhino was the worst selection, in my opinion. I think
he was the one who hasn't
played
in 3 years, international cricket, international ODIs.
I guess the reason behind was to have a lefty in there, but I don't think that's important enough to be playing a guy who's towards the tail end of his career when you have so much young talent who looks better at the crease. And like you said, I mean, Iyer should have been given a chance for sure.
That,
you know who's a lefty batsman who projects well in the ODIs in the middle order?
Rishabh Pant.
Oh, man. it's Rishabh Pant, the guy who scored like 700 runs in the IPL, and now he's being forced to play test matches. I don't have a problem with Rishabh Pant playing in a test match. What I do have a problem with is that he's only played 4 T20 internationals and hasn't played an ODI yet. Why are you giving him test games where his game doesn't match the format? Anyone can tell you that Rishabh Pant is not going to be successful in the test format long term, because that's just not what the test game asks. He's more successful in the T20 format. We've seen it. He can be highly successful, in my opinion, in the ODI format as your 5-6-7 guy, which happens to be a problem area for India. It's weird to me that these younger guys aren't getting a chance necessarily, or they've been selected in the squad, but it's just like an honorary selection.
Right.
And it's not really with the intent to play them out. Now, on Dhoni's point that you made, Dhoni is a historic chaser. He's an all-time chaser, and he's clearly lost a step in that regard. But I still think that he has value there. He has a cool head on his shoulders, and he's been there before. So I do think Dhoni still has some value there. But I agree, 4, 5, 6, depending on, you know, where Kohli bats, is a problem area that has been avoided for a long time now. And we've seen it, you know, crop up multiple times. And, you know, it does need to be addressed. Obviously, the test series is coming up, so not necessarily the time to address it, you know, with the test series coming up, but maybe after that, look at that middle order and say, in my opinion, the best way to fix it is you project 4 or 5 young players. You pick them up and you play them consistently in 5 or 6 straight ODIs, and you see their form based on that. And for me, those guys would be Iyer, Pant, and Rahul. And you play them 4, 5, 6 with Dhoni at 7 or Pandya at 7, however you want to go about it. And you just look at the form of those three guys and make your judgments based on that. Because I think shuffling guys in and out for one ODI doesn't really make sense, does it?
It doesn't really show your players you have faith in them, especially young players.
Yeah, and I think Rahul, soon enough, is going to have a case to get into the opening spot, too. Mm-hmm. Obviously, not anytime in the near future, because Shikhar Dhawan and Rohit Sharma are still looking good, although I do have some thoughts about Rohit Sharma, despite him. I still think he is one of the best batsmen in the world, and he is great to watch, but I do have some reservations about some of his innings recently.
You need someone in the four spot, I think, so I would put Rahul there.
Yeah, I
the beginning of the middle order.
Yeah, I don't know how, for me personally, I don't think he fits well on that middle order role. I think he's a top order batsman. I think he likes the new ball. He likes to be aggressive. So for me, I would rather see him in the opening spot. Like I said, you can't really replace him with either of the two. But he does have to be in the team. So if that means putting him in the middle order, so be it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, those guys need to get a chance for sure.
Yeah. So India won the T20 series. England bounced back in the ODI series. You got a nice break before this test series comes up. I believe we all had India in the test series.
Yep.
Do we still think those results play out? I still think India is going to win the test series. Akshay Parth?
I think it'll be close. It might be a 2-1 series in India's favor. There's going to be a couple draws. Hopefully we're not getting these two-day or three-day matches like we're seeing in other series around the world. But I think the pitches should be well prepared. We should see some 4 or 5 day matches.
So you're still going India?
Yeah, I'll go with India.
Pujara's form is scaring me a little
yeah,
bit.
True.
I'm still going to go with India, but that spot is a little flaky.
Well, we also lack Bhuvneshwar Kumar for the first ODI, and I think Bumrah's out for, test. And Bumrah's out for 2, if not 3 tests, so our pace attack is lacking more than usual.
Yeah.
Calling up Ishant Sharma and Umesh Yadav.
And Yadav had a strong performance through the limited overs, so we'll see how it plays out in the test. We've still got India in this one.
Saw some questionable selections in the test matches, like Karun Nair. I don't know why he's on that.
Reputation, man. Reputation goes a long way. But that does it for this episode of The Follow-On. Again, check out all our content on Facebook, Twitter, and followoncricket.com.